Welcome to Talk Tech with Data Dave. I am Alexis, your host of this podcast, along with my dear friend Data Dave, who is here with me today. Hey, Dave.
Hey Alexis, how are you today?
I'm good. I am excited about the question today, as usual. This question came from the big boss, my boss, your partner in crime, Mr. Preston Gregg. He suggests a question about encryption and data privacy. So I'm excited to read it off to you. But as always, I like to remind people that you can always submit a question to us at tech@d3clarity.com, and we would love to answer your question in the podcast. So send us those questions because although I have lots, as we've discovered, your questions are usually better. Talk Tech with Data Dave is brought to you by D3 Clarity, offering clarity for improved decision making. D3 Clarity delivers profitability multipliers through better data and digital infrastructure. For more information, contact D3 Clarity at d3clarity.com. So the question from Preston today, what is the role of encryption in data privacy? We've got a couple of things there. So we've got encryption, which you and I have talked about a little bit before, but love to talk more about that. And then obviously data privacy is something we talk about often. So yes, what is the role of encryption in data privacy? Take it away, Dave.
Okay, encryption in data privacy. Encryption is actually incredibly valuable to data privacy, certainly at the technical level. So let's talk a little bit about both of those. Let's talk about data privacy first. If we talk about privacy, we're talking about the restriction of information to only the parties it is intended for. That's a reasonable definition of privacy in this context. So that means that if we've got some information, and I want to keep it to myself, then I want to keep it private. If I want to give it to you, I want to make sure it gets to you and only you, and you keep it private. So now we're talking about both the construct of communication and the construct of keeping it safe, secure, and not unintentionally published, right? So if I want to keep a document private in the physical world, I might put it in a safe and lock it, and there's a key to that safe. Might put it in a box and lock it, and there's a key to that box, and nobody can look at that except the person who has the key. And that's a physical key, or it could be a numeric key, but it's a physical key. Let's say it's a new physical key. So the concept of encryption, as we get into the electronic space, is the electronic box that you put a document in and you lock it and say, I have the key, and that key is who I am. And I can open that box and read that document.
The
If I
electronic box being my computer,
potentially your computer,
sometimes.
or just the file that it's in, just the file
Okay,
itself,
okay.
you can encrypt just the file, and then that, you've encrypted just that file or a set of files or whatever. So the box can be of varying sizes. Way back, we'd write a letter and you'd drop wax on it and seal that wax, and that is essentially encrypting that letter. Is it really keeping it private? Not really. It's really saying we know if it's been opened because the seal has been broken. So it didn't stop anybody from necessarily breaking the seal, but it did mean you knew it had been broken and you knew where it came from because the seal had a specific imprint of the person who sealed it. So that is the concept going back of privacy in the sort of physical world. If we want to keep ourselves private, our communications, whatever, we close the door, we lock the door. I just closed my door so that nobody could inadvertently hear what we're saying in this. And so they keep themselves private as well. The concept of privacy is keeping things to ourselves. In the electronic world, we use encryption. And this encryption idea is the codes and ciphers, if you like, of encrypting. And we've all played around with very basic codes and ciphers when we were kids, of doing letter transpositions and saying, I'm going to write this down, but I'm going to change all the A's to L's and rotate everything and so on.
Right,
Right?
classic decoder ring from a cereal box. Definitely did that as a
Exactly.
kid.
Classic
No questions asked.
decoder ring. That is a way of keeping things private because only you knew which decoder ring that you used when you wrote that document.
Absolutely.
That's the concept there in terms of codes and ciphers. When I was in the military, when I was in the army, we had to encrypt our own radio communications with burst communications in very early days of digital communications, where we had to do it manually. And first of all, we'd encode it so every word had a code. And then we'd take those codes and encrypt them by hand with
Oh my goodness.
with what was called a one-time pad, which had a set of secrets, a set of numbers in it that at a certain time interval, you move to the next number in the pad. And when you're done with the page, you ripped it off and threw it away. And the sequence of managing those numbers was, this was used once, it was only used once, only you had it, and only your base had it. They were matching pairs, so it's called a shared secret encryption. So you could communicate. We still use
a lot. You would encrypt it, and then when it got to them, they had the matching side, and that way they could unencrypt, so they could understand it.
That's where they could unencrypt and read it. That's exactly right.
Could you imagine if that's how we did work now?
Well, actually, it is. It's just done extremely fast by computers instead of doing it
there
by
we
hand.
go. Yes.
Right? We still use shared secret keys, which is you've got a key, I've got a key, and we communicate with each other. That's how we exchange information. Because when we're talking about privacy, it's not just about if I lock something in a box and don't let anybody see it, that's not really very useful. What I really want to be able to do is send it to you so you can decrypt it. It's private between us, or it's private between myself and my bank, or it's private in whatever context we want to make it private. So we're only publishing intentionally. And so the basic form of encryption is shared secret encryption. There's lots of algorithms and lots of mathematical constructs and different key lengths and so on that make it harder to crack. As computers have got bigger, the little numbers that we had when we were in the 1980s and 70s and 60s and so on were very short and, by modern terms, easy to crack. When you look at the Enigma machine of the Second World War and so on, by modern standards, relatively easy to crack. Now we've got 128 bits, 500 bit, you know, very long numbers that form these keys because we manage them with computers. And then we can do asynchronous keys or asymmetric keys as well, where I have a key and only your key can decrypt it, and only things that you encrypt with that key, I can decrypt. And you can't actually decrypt it yourself.
Oh, so they're not the same.
No.
It's just one way. Okay. Did you say asynchronous?
Asymmetric, yes.
Asymmetric, okay.
Symmetric keys or shared secret keys, and then asymmetric keys, and what we usually term public-private keys. Public
okay.
And private keys. You've probably heard that phrase more than asymmetric.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to go into the details of how all that works, because that's a set of conversations for another day. I think.
Far more detailed maybe than for me.
Well, I'm not going to say that. Because
maybe not for this podcast. How about that?
So what we need to do, because a lot of this is hidden from us now, because we kind of take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was what I was implying when I said, could you imagine if we worked like that today? Like, I think I understand that our email is encrypted. And if I send you an email, no one besides you can really open it. But I guess I know that on a very high level. I take it for granted. I assume it's there and I hope for the best.
Yes. A lot of things are encrypted. So there's things like, you've probably heard the term encrypting data at rest.
I think I've heard you say that before. Yes.
Right. And okay. that is one of the standards where whenever data is stored, it must be encrypted. So the SOX compliance that we did, that we have, and the HIPAA compliance and so on requires that all data be encrypted at rest. What that manifests itself to is that we've got a corporate policy that all the data on the disks, on our laptops, and on any servers has to be encrypted.
Well, believe me, I know that policy well, because it's my job to enforce it. It's my job to enforce it to 30 plus computers around the world. It's very difficult. I'm sorry. That's my rant. Okay, I'm back.
So, and it's not that difficult because we created the policy and then we've got things that manage it for us and various other things.
Right.
But what that means is that all the data on that disk is encrypted. It is mathematically locked down by the user of that computer, where that user has a key. You don't know it. It's embedded within your identity as Alexis at D3 Clarity, that you have a key that is a mathematical key that allows you to encrypt and decrypt the data that resides on your disk drive. If I was to take that disk drive out of that computer and try and read it in a different computer, I could not do it without your key.
Right.
And so that is essentially locking that box. But to the using of that computer, once you've logged on to that computer, that computer is now open and your key is available to that computer such that you can read all that data. That's the way that that behaves. Once you logged on, you barely know about it.
Right.
But that also, knocking on from that policy, becomes the policy of must have a screensaver. That's not so that people can't see what you're doing over your shoulder, so much as it means that that disk now has to have its key presented back to it in order for you to use it again.
Right.
Which is your logon. So now somebody plugs into that computer and doesn't have your logon, they can't access it unless it's something that you've permitted to run in the background and things like that.
Got you. Okay.
A lot of this comes from the same place, which is that encryption of this data, which is essentially making your computer into that locked box that only you have a window into. When it comes to communications, we have to be careful because we have to decrypt that data with our key, and then I have to send it to you so that you can read it. And then when it goes onto your computer, you have to encrypt it with your key because now it's yours. But what happened between you and I?
Went through one of those tunnels that you told me about one time,
Yes.
Those tubes that are fuzzy and not clear.
Exactly.
I'm remembering things. Look at this. I don't know what they're technically called, but it works in my brain.
Exactly. It went through one of those encrypted sockets or pipes or pseudo pipes, if you like.
Sockets, yes.
Which is what you're looking for when you see HTTPS in the top of the browser window, like my Zoom has HTTPS on it right now, which means all those packets are encrypted between me and that server, between my computer and that server. Not all data is encrypted as it travels. A lot of email is not encrypted. So be a little bit careful about putting things like credit card information and things like that in emails. Company email is usually fine, but you don't know when it's going across the internet, when it's going out into the broader world out there from yourself to, I don't know, from our email server to somebody else's. You don't know unless you've explicitly signed and encrypted that email, then it could go across the internet in the clear between some of the bigger email traffic.
That's something I had never really thought about before.
Right. And it's not between you and I because it never goes outside of our domain.
Right.
But if it's going from the D3 Clarity domain to Gmail, we don't know what happens between Microsoft and Google.
Right. Or between the D3 Clarity domain and a different domain, right?
Right, between the D3 Clarity domain and a different domain. Now, I was intentional on using Gmail because if you happen to have two domains that are managed by Microsoft, they probably encrypt it. But if you're reaching out beyond that, you don't know. So be careful. And
good
I'm not
advice,
going to say it's
yeah.
not. I'm not going to say it's not. I'm going to say you don't know that it is. Does that make sense?
That's perfect. Yes.
And so you have to be careful because in the early days of the internet, none of this was encrypted. It was all in the clear because when the internet was first invented, a lot of it was in clear and these threats and so on weren't there for people spoofing and different things and phishing and all these other things that occur that we don't like. So we have developed these encryption, these techniques to keep things private, to keep things safe, and keep things authenticated, shall we say.
We've been talking, about encryption and privacy as kind of like the two main items, but what is the difference, if any, between encryption and privacy in general and encryption and specifically data privacy? Like, what is there a specific role that encryption plays when it comes to data privacy, not just privacy in general?
They're subsets of each other, right? So data privacy and your privacy, if we talk about your identity for a minute, encryption is a technology more than anything else. It's a mathematical approach and it's a technology. Privacy is a ethical construct, if you think about it that way. We use encryption to protect our privacy. We don't have to protect our privacy. We like people to protect our privacy on our behalf.
Yes.
And you should read people's privacy policies. People will publish their privacy policy. And as you know, the SOX 2 requires us to have data in motion encryption and data at rest encryption, which is what we've just been talking about. Those are policies to protect our privacy, protect our customers' privacy, and protect our data. The encryption is a technology that supports that. It's the same as if you were transporting cash, you'd put it in a briefcase and handcuff it to your wrist, right? You've seen that in the movies and various places. That's a policy, and the briefcase is the technology. So the policy is that it's going to go into a locked briefcase and only people at the ends have. The technology is the briefcase. If we think about nuclear launch codes and requiring the two keys to be turned at the same time and the right buttons being pressed, that is policy, and the fact that there's two keys is technology. So it's the same kind of thing. When we deal with organizations, we should be reading their privacy policy, which is how are they going to behave as it pertains to our privacy, and what are they going to publish or sell to third parties? And we should be aware of that. And we should also read their policy in terms of what technology are they going to use to ensure our privacy.
I like what you're saying there, but my question is, what's the alternative? So if I read the policy and I see that they are, okay, I don't want to use just the privacy part, because if they're going to sell my information, I'm probably going to be like, nope, don't want to use you. Although the truth is people sell my information every day and I really don't care about it. So that's a different story. But as far as like what technology, like you just said, what am I looking for when I'm looking through a privacy policy to make sure that my data privacy is being encrypted, to make sure that my privacy is being secured when I'm using this platform, when I'm using the service, when I'm using whatever?
Right. You should be looking for the fact that they're not going to do anything that you don't want done with your data. The fact that ownership is a big deal, right? Some of the social media sites, actually, when you publish a photograph, you no longer own that photograph. So that means they've actually got publication rights to that photograph. So you need to be careful with some of that. And you need to look at who owns the rights to what you're putting out there. And therefore, what are their policies around what they're going to do with it? And how are they going to protect it from unintended access? And what I mean by that is, so there's the policy of the organization, and then there's the spoofing, phishing, and theft, right? Which is the theft of your identity, which is taking your private information and using it in order to steal from you or from your bank or whatever. And that's the unintended. That's not the company's policy. That is now the encryption technology stepping in to prevent unintended access.
Absolutely.
We use the technologies to prevent unintended access, which would be, again, the cash being moved in the briefcase. We're going to use a steel briefcase to move this cash and an armored truck. Right? That's the technology that says, okay, I'm pretty confident because they're using this technology that my data is going to, or my cash is going to get from here to there without being interfered with by people, bad actors that I don't want to interfere with my cash.
And encryption is just the mathematical technology version of that, right?
Exactly. Encryption is the mathematical technology version of that, which is my data is locked in this briefcase, in this box, so that when I put it on my disk, it sits there so nobody can steal it. Nobody can take it off my disk. And if they did, they'd only get the box. They wouldn't get the document. Same as your safe in your house that has your passport in it when you're not using it. And then if you take it to somewhere else, you take that, you make sure there's policies around that, and then take it somewhere else. Put it in a briefcase that's locked and locked to your wrist, whatever it is, and then take it to the bank and put it in another safe box.
Right.
The usage of that technology is policy.
The original question, what is the role of encryption in data privacy? Again, I think the answer to that is a whole lot of stuff, but it's obviously security is a huge aspect of it. Any other quick, how would you answer that question in three words if you could? Maybe not three words, in 30 words if you could.
It's used tremendously in data privacy, but it is the technology of protection that can be used in conjunction with policy to protect privacy.
That was the perfect wrap up. That's what I wanted to hear. Dave, thank you so much for answering that question. Thank you, Preston, for offering that question. I think that was a good one for us to chat about. For those of you out there listening, if you have a question for Data Dave, as always, you can email us at talktech@d3clarity.com or submit question right on the D3 Clarity website. We love to answer listener questions on the podcast. Otherwise, Dave, thank you so much for meeting with me today. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Alexis. Thank you very much. And again, to everybody, please submit some questions.
If you have a question for Data Dave, reach out to us via email at talktech@d3clarity.com. We'll be happy to answer your questions in the podcast. Thanks. This podcast has been brought to you by D3 Clarity. No one has time or patience to fix all of their data and infrastructure problems. D3 Clarity helps some of the world's most recognizable brands take the right action to turn their information into strategic profit-making. For more information, go to D3 Clarity, that's the letter D, the number 3, the word clarity.com.